This is Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. Dialogue Conspiracy is a program which shares the political research of Mae Bressel. Her almost 10 years of work are based on the theory that government is moved as much or more by conspiracy than by any democratic process. Saturday edition of Dialogue Conspiracy from the studios of KLRB-FM. Good afternoon, May.
Hi.
Watergate Hotel?
The Watergate Hotel.
Back to the Watergate. We don't even have reservations there. We're there every week.
We don't know the right people. The hotel manager isn't in your address book? He was in the address book of the men that were arrested there.
Let's review what the Watergate Hotel means.
Okay.
What is the Watergate Hotel besides a hotel?
Let's see, the anniversary of the Watergate affair, I'm calling it the Watergate affair. I hope it becomes known as that and not passed off as something very insignificant. It's going out of the news now 3 weeks ago, June 17th. Is that 2 weeks ago? Three. This track of time seems so long. I've been working on it for so long. The early hour morning of June the 17th, a guard was walking around the Watergate Hotel down at the basement and making rounds, security guard there. It's a hotel in Washington, D.C. It's a very lush hotel with a complex's offices that rent there, too. And it's the home of John and Martha Mitchell. Our friends John and Martha reside at the Watergate Hotel. And it's also the home of the Democratic National Committee. They have offices at the Watergate Hotel. And other political parties also have offices there. And early hour morning, the guard was walking around and saw scotch tape, and he removed it from the door and went back to the desk and had a hunch, what he called a hunch. And he went back to where the scotch tape was removed, and somebody had put another piece of scotch tape over the door that kept it supposedly from catching. And this is an interesting story in itself, because the guard later said the doors opened and closed. The Watergate affair is going to be the biggest story in the nation, I hope, if there's not a news blackout on it. And it seems that somebody inside of that group of five men has to be possibly counterintelligence, because they wanted to be caught. They put scotch tape over the latches of the doors from the eighth floor down and from the basement up, and they were working on the sixth floor, the gentlemen that were caught, arrested. And the guard said that the doors opened and closed. There wasn't any need for the tape. And anybody who's done surveillance or bugging leaves a wooden match or some instrument in the door, and you don't need tape that's visible. So somebody in there, or some god in heaven, is watching over and sending down this guard, you know, who sees the tape. It was some kind of a message the hotel and security people filled. But anyway, the guard called the Washington Special Squad, please. The men arrived and traced the tape over various doors up to the sixth floor of the Democratic National Committee, and five men were working in that office, removing the ceiling panels over the desks where Larry O'Brien, chairman of the Democratic National Committee, works, and other members of the committee. The men had fancy dinner suits. They had been eating dinner downstairs, these five men. They dined on lobster. They had their mace fountain pens in their pockets and surgical rubber gloves on their hands, and they had thousands of dollars worth of expensive camera equipment and radios and walkie-talkies and electronic devices. Supposedly $30,000 had already been spent on these particular men for hotel reservations, rooms, and equipment.
Now, those men were not just common, ordinary criminals. They had backgrounds which they still are very interesting to many people, including you as a researcher. But They had some interesting ties.
Well, they had interesting ties, and the five men that were arrested, we'll go into the ties of the men, the five men that were arrested belonged to a nine-man team. In May 26th to 29th, nine men registered at the Watergate Hotel, all using aliases. And the aliases they used were out of a novel written by CIA writer Howard Hunt. He's written 40 or 42 novels, fictions, detective stories, and the names that they registered came from his novels. And there were nine men there at the hotel May 26th, 29th, and again on the 17th, 18th. Four got away, and it's 2 weeks later now, and four are still not arrested or have not been found, and nobody is saying where they were. The apartment that the Mitchells live in the Watergate Hotel, could be connected to the electronic devices that were being set up in the Democratic headquarters. John Mitchell was the head of the Justice Department, the Attorney General of the United States, until a few months ago when he resigned to head the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon, which he considers more important than being the Attorney General of the United States at this time. John Mitchell heads the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon. He lives at the Watergate Hotel. One of the men arrested was under the salary of the committee to re-elect Richard Nixon at the time he was arrested. He got $1,200 the month of April, the month of May, and I assume the month of June. He was employed by the committee to elect Richard Nixon, and he was arrested putting bugging devices or taking them from the Democratic headquarters. There were five men that were arrested, and the news media swept right in with what I call the cover story, because all the five men were directly related to the Central Intelligence Agency, and they were all related to the Bay of Pigs invasion, too. That was just 11 years ago, and that was the time that John Kennedy said, "I'm going to tear the CIA to shreds and cast it to the wind." He referred to a hidden government behind his back. Away from the Watergate 1 minute, in August, we did a show called, it was about Jack Anderson's article called Balderdash. Remember a researcher on political assassinations named Dan Wrighty, who lives in San Francisco, sent information to Jack Anderson in Washington that a high-level plot had killed John Kennedy. And he mentioned members of the White House, the CIA, the FBI, the military, and the syndicate were all involved in killing President John Kennedy. And this was following the Bay of Pigs invasion, too, just a year and a half after he canceled the Bay of Pigs invasion. Well, Jack Anderson wrote an article that went all over the country titled Balderdash, in which he put down the researchers and this particular research job as being impossible or silly, and he just throws it to the wind that there is any conspiracy in the United States to kill the president or candidate at the election season. Well, Jack Anderson's name came up when one of the men arrested at the Watergate Hotel, Mr. Frank Sturgis, surfaced. And who was at court speaking up for Frank Sturgis? His little old friend Jack Anderson. He supplies information to Jack Anderson on the Miami Cuban, exiled Cuban community, and CIA and the FBI. Jack Anderson, Sturgis is part of the FBI, contacts with the FBI. He's a CIA agent. He was born in Cuba. He's worked with the Anti-Castro Cubans. He's an important person with important links in the Miami area and with the assassination teams and the entire operation as it breaks down. So, once and for all, if you think Jack Anderson tells the total truth, he may tell some truth, like the ITT or Kissinger, the memo that he took from the National Security Council about Kissinger and his opinions about India, double dealing State Department with India and Pakistan. But Jack Anderson has money, mind, just like anybody else. His truths are selective. If he gets information from a particular man, and he likes that informer, and if that man is directly or indirectly, even indirectly, involved with anything like a political conspiracy, Jack Anderson has not touched the conspiracy. And it isn't hard to figure out now why he has selective truth. But when he put down these organizations, I'm going to tell you the organizations that are involved at the Watergate Hotel, and the same organizations were involved in the killing of John Kennedy. The names are different now, and I have so much material, I'm going to try and go slow and not jump around, but we're going to be referring, as I go through the cast of characters of the Watergate, we're going to be referring to the White House, the CIA, the FBI, the military, every branch, the Army, Navy, the Air Patrol, and the troops, and the organized crime. They were all involved with members that were arrested at the Watergate, just like they were in the John Kennedy murder. But maybe people will understand who've listened to these shows and taped them for a long time. Maybe they will understand how the agencies combine forces to work together if I can break through the chain of command at the Watergate Hotel. There were the five men arrested and the news media. We'll go back to the cover story. The news media, what little news we had, came over that it was either a bugging party or a robbery, or it was exile Cubans wanting to find out what the Democrats were going to do with Castro. Do you remember your impression when the first wire services came over, Phil? What, if we weren't working together on a show here, do you remember what kind of conversation you heard about the Watergate?
Well, my first impression was that the Republicans were out to find out the secrets of the Democratic Party. That was my first impression.
A surveillance party.
Right.
Yeah.
To, you know, to go through the files and then plant bugging devices so they could overhear what strategies were planned for the presidential campaign. First impressions.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like they have the surveillance equipment so they could pick up conversations. That's right. And the impression was John Mitchell said McCord, James McCord, who was hired by them for the security for the Republican committee, must have been there with other clients. They disassociated themselves from the four other men and said, well, McCord is our security agent. We fire him now. But he was serving other clients. And therefore...
That later proved to be not true, though.
Well,
that he didn't really even have a security agency of his own.
That's right. He didn't. He had no security agency. And his money is coming from the Central Intelligence Agency. That's his client. You know, that's who he's working for. Well, five men were arrested. One was James McCord, Jr. He was registered under an alias. And the other man, Frank Sturgis, Anderson's friend, Eugenio Martinez, Virgilio Gonzalez, and Bernard Barker. James McCord, Jr., the man who was working for other clients, left the Central Intelligence Agency in 1970. He did work there for 19 years. 3 years prior to that, he was in the FBI in radio work. He left there in 1970. His newest job recently was he was appointed the chief of security for the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. But James McCord had two jobs at the same time. He was chief of security for Nixon's reelection, and then he was chosen by the Secret Service to be the chief of security for the Republican National Convention in Miami. Now, Mr. McCord is to be in charge of all safety inside the building and outside and of the President of the United States. He's the chief of security for the Republican National Convention, appointed by the White House and President Nixon. And he's caught in the Watergate Hotel with men who have $89,000 worth of cash to pay provocateurs to make street fights in Miami. Now, this is going to get really heavy. He is caught with the men who are handing out hundreds of dollars, thousands of dollars, to make fights. And then Mr. McCord is going to secure Miami.
They were caught with money. They had large sums of money when they were arrested, is that right?
They were caught with
how do you tie in that this is money to be paid to
provocateurs? We'll do the whole money trip in a second. We'll go into the men, who they were first, and then we'll do their money.
I want to establish that because that's a hard statement to make.
Do you want to go right to the money? The source of the money?
Well, can you just touch briefly on what makes you feel that the money is for provocateurs, and then we can come back to the
As long as we're tying them all together. When they were arrested, the men had $6,500 on them in cash in their pockets, in the hotel room and in their pockets. And all the money collected at the time of arrest was $100 bills in consecutive order, crisp, new $100 bills. Bernard Barker was the fund man who accounted for the $6,500, and he said it came from a larger fund at the Republic National Bank in Miami. The Republic National Bank said that Bernard Barker deposited $89,000 there in April. $89,000. So the investigators or the news media wanted to know the source of that 89, and it was traced to a bank in Mexico City that has not yet been identified where it came from. Now, the bank in Mexico City claimed that it was a real estate deal that fell through, and Mr. Barker received $89,000 for a deal. It would be interesting if Barker pays an income tax on that $89,000. He's going to get a wallop if that's his cash. The Mexican money, see, the CIA has several ways of funding things. They don't just write a check and say, here, boys, go hand out the money. But Mr. Barker was seen with other witnesses. He had a seven-man secret team that went down to Miami to recruit provocateurs to go to Washington in May. But when J. Edgar Hoover died, they were transferred to, they were supposed to go to New York. They were transferred to Washington.
Now, where does that information come from?
I've got this from, I take eight papers a day.
But I mean, the statement that they were down there to recruit
provocateurs. This was from the Washington Post. From the Washington Post described a seven-man secret team headed by Bernard Barker and four of the men that were arrested at the Watergate, that they went to Miami, and they were recruiting men, and they had spent $10,000.
Recruiting men for what purpose?
To make demonstrations in New York City in May.
Now, the Washington Post said that.
Yes, the men were hired from Miami. This is taxpayers' money to go to New York City. And everyone in Miami knew this was CIA money flowing because they were $100 of consecutive order. Barker belonged to a seven-man secret committee. Seven were arrested at the Watergate Hotel. Three were in Miami at the time of the arrest. One left the country because he says something bad is going to happen, and he's splitting. So he left the country. One of the men has left. Two of the men have seen it so far have left the country. What the U.S. taxpayers' money goes into is to get men, such as the men hired in Miami, to go to New York City and all over the United States to demonstrate if Nixon escalates the war, the bombing, then these men get out on the street and fight the people who are demonstrating and pretend they want the war. This is what he was hiring people to demonstrate to support the bombing of Haiphong. J. Edgar Hoover died, so they moved the men. These particular men, I mean, there's hundreds of them all over the country. I'm talking about one little pocket at the Watergate that was caught. They moved them from New York to Washington, and where J. Edgar Hoover's body was lying in state. These paid provocateurs from Miami were demonstrating, and people were actually shot. This was the $100 bills that were coming from that body of money from the Mexico Bank to the Republic National Bank to Bernard Barker, who was caught with 6,500 of it. He said 30,000 of that money already went to Watergate expenses and electronic equipment. You see, McCord isn't going to say, James McCord, the CIA bought me this equipment at the Watergate, but it came from Mexico. The other source of funds, that this, you want to know where the hunk of the money comes for an operation like that before we go
into
it.
Not only where it comes from, but the fact that it's designated to hire provocateurs in Miami during the conventions, that's...
Oh, yeah. Well, each one of these...
A drastic statement to make.
Oh, I'm going to show you where each one had a particular assignment from the White House down, and then I'll go into the reasons for it and the motive for it. I hope I'm not going too fast. Sometimes people get lost. When they pick up the show, we're talking about the Watergate Hotel and the people in the Watergate Hotel in Washington, D.C. that were arrested, five men on June the 17th. Back to the financing of the operation, two men arrested in the Watergate Hotel. Mr. Martinez and Bernard Barker had in their possession the name of Howard Hunt with WH after it, meaning White House. And the news media comes out with the story that Mr. Hunt has either left the country or gone incommunicado, that he's a former CIA agent, that he's a writer. Who is Howard Hunt? Howard Hunt worked 21 years with the Central Intelligence Agency. He planned the Bay of Pigs invasion. When he skipped the country and they went to his desk at the White House, they found a set of two walkie-talkies that could connect to the walkie-talkies that were taken at the time of arrest from the Waterhouse bunch. He had that gun inside the White House. And Howard Hunt worked for the Central Intelligence Agency 21 years. James McCord, who was arrested, worked with them 19 years. So these were co-partners to a large hunk of American history, if you think of what's happened in the last 21 years. Well, Howard Hunt had an office. He worked as, in quotes, a White House consultant. 21 years with the White House, with the CIA, and at the time of his arrest, he still was getting paycheck through the White House. He was not, his office supposedly was with Mr. Bennett across the street as a writer for the, now that he's out of the CIA, but he had a desk at the White House at the time he left the country. The desk that he had with Mr. Bennett, Robert Bennett, the son of Senator Bennett of Utah, Senator W. Bennett of Utah, his son had a Washington public relations firm across the street from the White House, and Howard Hunt had a desk there. He worked there. Now, when the story broke, Robert Bennett admitted that he was the source of all the secret money that was collected for President Nixon's re-election up till April 1st. You know, a lot of people are saying, where did John Mitchell get $10 million? It's such a coincidence that the man who raised all that $10 million, his name, the name of the man that shares the desk with him, was on the two men at the Watergate Hotel. Now, Howard Hunt shares a desk in the office with Robert Bennett. Bennett had 75 to 90 committees set up. The title of his organization is called The American Dream. This is the American Dream Machine. It's too funny. You know, I can't pass it up. The American Dream Machine. Supporters of the American Dream. And they raised $10 million. But Mitchell refuses to say where the money came from. Now, this is from all the states. Some of the money, $325,000 of this money, Ralph Nader said, came from 68 different committees of the Associated Milk Company, and that by raising the milk prices for Richard Nixon, by his allowing them on the price freeze to raise the milk, they could make up the loss that they gave to this funding. This is what Ralph Nader was claiming just a little while ago, that President Nixon raised the government milk support prices. And therefore, the $325,000 they donate to Richard Nixon's committee through Mr. Bennett and Hunt makes up for the money that the Republicans get. If you drink your milk today, you may be buying a gunman for the Democratic convention. You're paying a man to be out there in Miami if you had your glass of milk today. That's about where it's going, you know?
Everybody likes milk.
Everybody likes milk. You see those big signs. Now, let's get the money thing
straight. Especially Richard Nixon's.
Okay, let's get the money thing straight. You have Howard Hunt, whose desk connects to the walkie-talkies at the Watergate Hotel, who has a gun in the desk at the White House. You have him 21 years in the CIA. He shares the office with Bennett. $10 million unaccounted dollars. Now, I call this the money circle. If James McCord was arrested, and he's being paid by Bernard Barker, who has $89,000 from a Mexican bank unaccounted for. Isn't the Central Intelligence, if the fund for Nixon is putting that money into Mexico, it's a money circle game. You follow? If the unaccounted money were deposited in the Mexico City Bank and then went to the Republican National Bank in Miami, it pays James McCord, who's also employed by the committee to reelect Richard Nixon. The same committee that hires him with one salary could deposit money and pay him to bug the Watergate through the Mexican bank while they pay him to secure them on the other level. You see the circle game? Do you understand the money game now? Is that clear for everyone who's listening? Is it clear enough, Phil?
I think so.
How the money transacts. The man who's arrested at the Watergate Hotel, James McCord, was under salary to John Mitchell's committee to re-elect Richard Nixon at the time he was arrested. At the time he was arrested, he was paid by Bernard Barker, who's the conduit of funds for the CIA, whose $89,000 in Mexico that goes to Miami isn't accounted for. So if the money that Bennett raises goes to Mexico and back to Miami, the same bank is paying him from two different places, from the Washington office and from the Mexican bank. He's getting money from the two.
So you're saying the CIA funds are going directly to the Republican National Committee also?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, these $10 million of secret money are used for anything they want. If they are hiring McCord to be chief of security. Now let's run down some of these names that were arrested, and then I'm going into the motives for all this too, because before we go too far, we've got the funding. I mentioned Sturgis, Martinez, Gonzalez, Bernard Barker. Two names were supposed to have gotten away that leaked out that were possibly there at the hotel. Two of the four men, one was Angel Ferrer and the other one was Humberto Lopez. Now we're going to go into the meaning of the Watergate thing and the motive for breaking in there. And then we have to go back to our early shows that I've done many times. And I refer to them over again because I never wanted the people who listened to Dialogue Conspiracy to lose track of the name of Louis Tackler. Because Louis Tackler surfaced in September 1971 as an agent with the Los Angeles Police Department. And I keep mentioning, this is very little that I've repeated on any of the shows in the 52 weeks we've been on, but I do want to repeat the Louis Tackler charges. The reason for his news conference last September, because it's important to the Watergate affair. And when people talk about something that happened in the past or something they're not familiar with, they lose it and can't put the whole story together. And I want to put the Tackler allegations to the Watergate. Louis Tackler claimed that he had worked for criminal conspiracy section of Los Angeles, that they plant conspiracies, the LA Police Department has assassination squads. There are directly involved in counterplots, conspiracies, and assassinations. And Tack would work for surveillance, intelligence, and investigation. He was assigned the position last year for Squad 19. This is a group that goes through the State Justice Department of Evel Younger into Washington. It is a coordinated contingency plan set up for the Miami, and it was the San Diego conventions, but they've been moved to Miami. The plan remains, the same people remain, only the location of the site is changed. Squad 19's purpose was to provoke violence at the Republican National Convention in 1972, that they were to have battles, they were to have agents on the street in demonstrations, that they were to have agents infiltrate the groups that were going to plan demonstrations against war and poverty, and that these agents would provoke street battles with the police surrounding the convention hall, and the agents inside the convention hall would plant explosives and blow up whoever was in the hall, congressmen, newsmen, public officials, representatives of the Republican Party would be inside the convention hall, and they would be blown up. And at the same time they'd be blown up, there'd be riots in the streets, and the delegates would be killed. And what was the purpose of all this killing? The same purpose of the hijacking. If you get all those hijackings, these are provocateurs. They're all phony, and after they're hired, they're killed. This rash of hijacking every morning that you see in your paper, two or three new ones, is the latest provocation to get fear in the country. We don't have national strikes, and the people aren't on the street objecting to the escalation of the war. The hijacking scene are paid political provocateurs. I say it now, within 6 or 8 months, one of them is going to break and live and talk, and the chain of command from that will be broken down like the street rioters. But we're talking about right now at the conventions, that they will get these people out on the streets and create fights, at which time Richard Nixon can't invoke special emergency powers called martial law and cancel the elections in 1972, that the chance that somebody like McGovern would make it, or a populist candidate would win, will not be allowed. There are going to be killings. We're talking now, the conventions are during the next week. There are going to be a lot of people killed in Miami. I hope I am wrong, but I can't see any way that it's going to be avoided. There's going to be a lot of planned killings at the Democratic and the National Convention. They had been planned for a long time. Louis Tackler had the name of a man to call in the White House as part of this Squad 19, and it was the same Howard Hunt who was involved in the Watergate affair.
We'll be back with part two of Dialogue Conspiracy after we identify the station. You're listening to KLRB FM Carmel in your radio 24 hours a day.